The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed executive editor, John Dixon. John, we got the votes. They're in. Buffalo has said no to Stephon Diggs. They all voted no on Stephon Diggs, and they have traded him to the Houston Texans. What do you believe? What do you think about that?
I thought we were talking about a different vote in this show. I'm sorry I didn't research that one. So
no, we will in a second here. Big vote happened in Kansas City last night, and I think it deserves a round table. And so we're going to have our Arrowhead Pride podcast producer, Steve Serta, in here. So we'll do the vote segment one. If you're sick and tired of hearing about the vote, I'm going to ask Steve to put the timestamp of segment two into the podcast description, because I know some of you don't want to hear any more about this vote and you're happy it's over. And I don't blame you for that. So we will have the podcast time that you could fast forward to, and we'll do our usual Chiefs news roundup. We have a lot to discuss when it comes to Rashee Rice and otherwise. And so that will be in segment two. But first, as we always do, if you leave us a rating and a review on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, we'll read it on the podcast. John, we have two in today.
Oh,
this one comes from Hot for Sween. My only complaint is that Pete compared the rugby player to a contestant on Love is Blind when it's clearly Love Island UK. I have a feeling where that one came from. Next one came from Clankster. When things look bleak for the Chiefs, I turn on my man Pete. The bro kept me centered throughout the 2023 season. He's the sound voice of reason in a troubled world. Thanks, Pete. I mean, I don't know if that's a little far, but I appreciate the love
you're
there.
You're not running for office now, are you?
No, maybe I should after looking at some of the tweets and such last night. And speaking of that, let's get into it. The vote comes down. There was the big vote going into April 2nd. I'll be honest with you. I think on both sides, it got a little nastier than I would have liked. I didn't really like where this went. By the end of it, it seemed like something that where you understood both sides of it. But I was looking forward to April 3rd. So here we are in the April 3rd edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. And I think, you know, when you talk about anything that is political, John, we're in such a place nowadays where it has to be fierce, and you can't have a discussion and go have a beer after. I like to have a discussion and let's go get a beer. We're always careful with political things. Political bleeds into the NFL with the Chiefs and certainly with Arrowhead Pride. We don't use the T word a lot on I know there's a lot of Chiefs fans that are fans of the T word and a lot that are not fans of the T word. And so, we don't say Mahomes trumps the rest of the NFL. He conquers it here on Arrowhead Pride. So let's keep that in mind as we go. I know that Steve and I have differing opinions on this. And so that's why I wanted to make sure that he was in. And we did go out of our way. I will say this going into the vote, we didn't cover it all that much in Arrowhead Pride. I didn't think it was fair for us to inject our opinion on such an important topic. And so, we held off. Some of us believe certain things, others believed other things. Here's where I end up on it. This thing goes no, 58%. you know, in the realm of votes having to do with a city, can't say it another way. This was a beatdown. And I look at the why of it being a beatdown. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people that were fans of the Crossroads. There was the KC tenant group that really didn't want to extend the tax and hand it over to private equity and billionaires as they described. You know, I understand that the Chiefs and Royals rushed this plan along. I know that fans weren't exactly happy with the location of the Royal Stadium. I know that people were a little bit underwhelmed with what was described as the reimagined Arrowhead when it, you know, wasn't really all that reimagined, if we're being honest. So I want you to know, like, I understand all the reasons that it went. No, you know, that to me, it makes a lot of sense. Where I think it might have been lost in this particular vote is just the lack of leverage that the Jackson County voters have. This isn't Green Bay, right? Like, the city doesn't own the team. These are two owners that have private businesses that own the team. And I think, and I, like I said, I understand all the reasons that it went no, but I think now there's a risk on the table of the Chiefs not playing at Arrowhead beyond 2030. I think there's a real risk. Like, I, in talking to people, like, you know, with the team, around the team, they're really legitimately, this isn't fake, they're really legitimately now open to anything. Like, I would put them potentially moving to somewhere like Kansas or Wyandotte County, somewhere else, probably close to like 40%, you know, if not higher than that now. And I think we'll see in the years to come, you know. And I also think with the no vote, it's still a 100% guarantee that the Royals leave the K. It's just a matter of finding a new location. Is that going to be in the East Village like everybody wants? Maybe, you know, maybe not, you know. Now you're adding in other cities. I think for both teams, it is open season now where other counties and states, you know, Kansas and otherwise, can bid on these teams. And so, while, yeah, I understand the plan was rushed, I understand no one wants necessarily extension of the tax, I think what gives me pause is we might be looking at this 6 or 7 years from now. And if the Chiefs are leaving Arrowhead, which is beloved by all the fans, you know, you look, I think there will be some regret that they look back to this and say, you know, maybe we should have just extended the tax, especially given how successful the team has been. And I said what I said at the beginning, because as you can see in what I've described, there's both sides to this, John. And and it's complex and complicated. And that's why it annoys me that the world right now cannot have discussions like this where you look at all the angles. But that's just kind of how I feel. I think it's understandable, but I also think that this could be looked at back for a lot of people who love KC Mo, who love Jackson County, as a day we might have slipped up a little bit because we didn't realize just like how little leverage or any leverage that we were giving up in this vote. Where did you come out on your feelings on this?
Well, I think this is an interesting situation because I think there are so many issues involved in it. It's really hard to pin down the biggest piece of it. I think it's significant that the two teams essentially had their fortunes tied to each other. And I'm not sure the two teams are viewed on an equivalent basis by the residents of Jackson County. I mean, I think it's fair to say that everybody loves the Chiefs. Maybe not so many people love the Royals in comparison. And I think the Royals, what the Chiefs said they were going to do was underwhelming, but they also weren't spending as much money as the Royals were planning to spend.
Right.
And the Royals pulled a fast one, I thought, by announcing a whole new stadium plan when they've been looking at three other things for a long period of time. And those things all add up to negatives for the Chiefs. I personally, you have a better feel for what they're saying out at One Arrowhead Drive than I do. I admit that. But I think that the possibility that the Chiefs will leave the metro area is very small. I think there's a better chance the Royals will leave the metro area than the Chiefs will. But I wouldn't know how to put a figure on that. And the reason I say that is that the leases for these stadiums continue
right
until 2031.
Right.
And neither of these teams has to go anywhere until then, which means that we're going to have more votes. They're going to take another crack at this because it's easier for both teams to stay in Kansas City than it is to go someplace else. And I don't think they're going to give up just because they lost this vote.
I'll tell you this. I think this is the last vote where the Chiefs and Royals are tied together. And maybe that is something that people will be happy about. Yeah. I do think if you want to say that the Chiefs were listening to Kansas before and, you know, it was kind of like this empty threat, I don't think it's so much like an empty threat right.
That's
anymore
fair.
Yeah. after yeah. this vote, you know, and is that like, for me, is that fair that in a sense, what, you know, both teams were doing in a joint way was like kind of holding the county hostage. No, it isn't. But at the same time, it's a private business. Like, you know, if the teams belong to the city and you could have unlimited votes and unlimited plans, I think that's one thing. But again, that to me is what stands out about the no and the negative of it is that, yeah, I get it. Like the 3A tax wasn't ideal. It wasn't ideal that it was for 40 years. It wasn't ideal that they didn't have as much clarity as we might have wanted. But this was legitimately an opportunity to say, okay, we understand all that. That kind of stinks, and it stinks in a bad way. Like I can even say as far as that, but I just now think that it's open season and like, we'll have to end up seeing what happens. Steve, I know that you were a big fan of the no vote. So as I said, right, we're equal opportunists here at Arrowhead Pride. What did you make of everything that took place last night?
I don't want to say I'm a big fan of it. Like
Steve
I
hates sports, like just so you know, everybody
against yeah. progress because this is something me and you have had a lot of conversations about right. this beat over the last few months. And I've really honestly gone back and forth, like up until even like a couple of weeks ago, I was kind of leaning towards yes. And then I eventually settled on no. And I think it highlights some things that both of you have already said. Like I decided no on it because I just didn't feel like there was enough clarity from these teams on exactly what was happening. And I also think that it was a disservice to the people of Kansas City for the Chiefs to just kind of tag along in this thing where the Royals were the ones kind of pushing, taking the real negative hits in the public eye and PR. And that's a tough look with a new owner who hasn't had any success yet. So it's already like, kind of when Royals fans think about John Sherman, I think there's a negative connotation to that already in their minds. And I'm not a baseball fan, so I don't care at all. Like, it does not matter. I do not
Steve's ready for the NBA to be in Kansas City.
But it just kind of felt like the Chiefs just kind of tagged along with this thing and put out, you know, really minimal plans for like the updates that they're going to make to Arrowhead. And it's like, cool, a new bridge for the nosebleed parking that you're going to put in and yep. some upgrades to suites that 95% of fans will never, ever be able to afford or sit in. And like, I just think that the Chiefs should have been more out in front of this thing and they should have been the ones more open in the media and out there kind of trying to represent this entire thing, because I think there's a case to be made if they were and they really wanted this thing to pass, then it probably could have, because the Chiefs have bought so much leeway with the people of Kansas City, but they didn't do that. They were just kind of quiet in the background saying like, hey, we want a few hundred million dollars of this thing too, while the Royals were taking all of the negative PR hits. And I just felt like I wanted to see more effort from them, more clarity from them. And I think really it was kind of handled embarrassingly in both sides, like the politicians, the teams, the people of Kansas City in a lot of ways. Like, I just don't think this was good for anybody. I am all for progress. I'm all for a downtown baseball stadium. I'm all for the Chiefs renovating Arrowhead and making updates and all of that stuff. I just want real plans that they mm-hmm. are open and willing to share with the people of Kansas City before I'm ready to commit to, you know, paying more taxes, because I don't think anybody likes paying taxes, but I don't have a problem with it if I know that there's tangible benefits that are coming with it.
Right.
And I just didn't feel like they were clear enough about any of that stuff. And I think it starts with the Chiefs just not being more open and being more willing to
be out in front of this thing and be a face of it. And instead, they just kind of let the Royals do it and it backfired.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear here. I mean, I think there's a 0% chance the Chiefs leave Kansas City. That those kind of posts is crazy. Royals, I think there's a slim chance. Like if I would say the chance of the Chiefs leaving Kansas City is 0%, I would say it's non-zero for the Royals. But to me, what John Sherman has working against him, and that is he's from KC, and he likes the Royals, and that's he's so happy to be
first date with his wife was at a Royals game.
Yeah, he's so happy to be the Kansas City Royals owner. So, you know, if you're talking about leverage, if you're looking for a little bit of leverage, like I would imagine Sherman does not want to move the Royals away from KC. I think the way that this plays out is there's another location for the Royals stadium. There's another vote that I think is separate for the Kansas City Royals. And I'm trying to realistically put the percentage of the Chiefs staying at Arrowhead at 40%. But if you're making me guess, I might guess that they would maybe move to Kansas. I think now this opens the door for the open bidding. And I just think, like, if you look at Kansas and some of the laws, I saw this morning, and this was eye-popping to me. I didn't even realize this. But, John, as part of passing legal wagering in Kansas, 80% of the money in a fund will go to a portion of it will go to attracting new teams to that state, pro sports teams. And so, you know, I think Kansas loved the vote last night. And you know what? If I'm being real, I think there is a part of the Chiefs that loved it, because now they can, in a sense, create a bidding war for, you know, where you would put a state-of-the-art stadium, which would lead to a lot of money in a lot of different ways. You know, I think this was a middle of the road decision for the Chiefs and a tough one for the Kansas City Royals. If we're really being honest, you know, I think there are pros and cons for Kansas City Chiefs, and really I think disappointment and mostly cons for what would be the Kansas City Royals.
I think it's important for us to remember that most professional sports teams in major cities no longer reside in those cities. The stadiums aren't in those cities. The Jets and the Giants play in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The 49ers, their newest stadium is out in the boonies away from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. This is no different. The thing that's different about Kansas City is there's a state line involved. And I think that and a controversial state line. It's been controversial since before the Civil War.
Right.
So that's part of the cultural effect that's at work here. But I think also that we have to keep in mind that when the Chiefs came to Kansas City, the city itself was the identity of the metropolitan area. You know, I think about my uncle, who was one of the people who sold season tickets to help bring the team to Kansas City. He's one of those guys. And he lived in Prairie Village at the time. And Prairie Village was a little development surrounded by fields at that time. Kansas City was still the big deal. Right now, most of the money that supports the Chiefs, that is the people who buy tickets to the stadium, that spend money on merchandise and that kind of thing, comes from the more affluent areas on the Kansas side. And I think part of what's driving the votes in Jackson County is that they're tired of paying taxes so people from the Kansas side can have fun at Arrowhead. I think there's a significant number of people who feel that they're tired of having to bear that burden for folks who live someplace else. And I wonder if it wouldn't be smart for there to be some kind of it'd be very hard to arrange. And I know there's been talk about this before, of arranging some multi-city consortium,
right,
that could that build a stadium someplace that could represent the entire city and maybe take over the stadium that exists now.
Right.
And the whole metro could be part of it and bear the cost of it together. Maybe that's the solution, ultimately, so that we can all feel like we own a piece of it.
Steve, anything to add there?
Yeah, I think that would be great, like some kind of compromise between the two. Like, and I still think it's a long shot that the Chiefs are going to leave Arrowhead Stadium. But as Pete mentioned, like, yes, it's absolutely on the table now. And I wouldn't be totally shocked that if in a decade, you know, the Chiefs are playing in a dome that is in Kansas because they were able to give the Chiefs an offer. Whereas before, this isn't something that would have been considered, but probably is now because Kansas has the money and the ability to do it and the space to do it. And so it would make sense. And so it'd be a letdown if Arrowhead no longer existed, but also a brand new state-of-the-art dome or something like that would be something that would get people really excited about the Kansas City Chiefs. So I don't think this has become such a divisive thing, and it's going to continue and continue and continue. And I just don't, I don't think these things should be divisive, and I don't think they always are if there's just more clarity from the people who are asking for these things. And I think that's what a lot of people in Kansas City were just asking for in all of this. And so hopefully that's something that they learn moving forward, and that's something that we get a few more answers and them being more willing to sit down and share their plans instead of just kind of throwing together an outline and being like, this is it. And because it just felt like that's kind of the way they went about this stuff. And I don't think that was the best way to handle it.
I couldn't have said it better myself. We should have the editor show and Steve on the board as we enter the next step of whatever happens to these two teams and the stadium and the votes and all that. Because, you know, we have found a way to hash it out in 20 minutes here. So we but it's come and gone. We've talked about the stadium vote. We will keep track of what happens next. I imagine now this story, John, has been elongated. We'll see where it goes from here. Yeah. We'll keep you updated.
It's
on
a
that
long way from over now.
Arrowheadpride.com. When we come back, we will do a roundup of the Kansas City Chiefs football news. Stay with us. This is the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon. Thank you to Steve for joining us for the stadium vote roundtable in segment one. But now we are in segment two. And John, we got to start on a pretty sour note. We haven't podcasted since this all came about. And it's been the it story about the Chiefs, unfortunately, since you know, what would be over the weekend. But Rashee Rice was connected to a major accident in Dallas. It included a six-car pileup. Seems like Rice had connection to the two cars from the information that's, you know, begun to come out. He owned one. He ended up leasing another. It seemed like one of his friends were driving one. We're not sure if he was driving the other. It seems likely, just considering the rental company has said that he was the only one allowed. Not to say that if people are street racing, you could really care about the rules that a rental company gives you. The wide receiver has hired a lawyer. It's actually Texas State Senator Royce West. He released a statement on Monday on behalf of Rashee Rice. His thoughts are with everyone impacted by the automobile accident on Saturday. Rashee is cooperating with authorities and will take all necessary steps to address the situation responsibly. Any and all requests for comment can be directed to his attorney, Mr. Royce West of West and Associates. And so the NFL has confirmed their monitoring situation. This is what Mark Donovan said. In all these situations, you have to wait until you have all the facts. And frankly, we don't have all the facts at this point. The one comforting fact that we do have is there was a multi-car crash in Texas. And fortunately, it doesn't appear that anyone was hurt. And we should all be grateful for that. And here's the key quote from the Chiefs. We'll get to the bottom of it. We'll gather the facts and we will react accordingly. And I think there's still, John, a lot we don't know about the situation. We know that Rashee certainly put himself in a really bad position by being a part of this in some capacity. And I think the worst thing was leaving the scene of what was an accident and a crime. You just can't do that. I know the rules vary from state to state. I've talked to some lawyers that are just, you know, taking stabs at this based upon what we know. A lot will depend on whether it can be proved that Rashee was intoxicated in some capacity, the extent of injuries, which is still a little bit unclear. We know no one died. We don't know the severity of, you know, what happened injury wise. But again, just with him hiring such a high caliber lawyer, I mean, signs point to that this is going to be a very serious legal situation. We'll see what comes out with the facts. And then I would anticipate, no matter what, that Rasheed will not be starting the 2024 season with the Chiefs. This, to me, is something that the NFL will act upon. And as far as the personal conduct policy, you know, whether that is between one and two and three games, could be more than that. The biggest thing I think for me, as I look at this is still a young kid who's on top of the world, broke out as a rookie receiver, really hard to do in the NFL, especially, you know, with Andy Reid. I was back in Texas, seemed to be celebrating just the off season and one of his friend's birthdays, hanging out, it looked like, with some fellow SMU teammates, some former teammates. And this was a really dumb decision. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And I think the bigger thing, more so than what will be the legal and the NFL penalty to come, which I'd imagine is like this set needs to be a fork in the road moment for him, where he's like, you know what, some of these things aren't worth it. I have a lot ahead of me. I play with the best quarterback in the world. I have a lot of talent. There's no reason I need to be doing stuff like this. Again, no, we don't know how it'll play out from a penalty standpoint, but you know, that has been my takeaway here, and I'll let you weigh in with what you think, John.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's so difficult to predict how the NFL will react to something like this.
Yeah.
If you look at it, make an attempt to quantify how the NFL has responded to violations of the personal conduct policy, all you get is inconsistency. So it's really impossible for us to say whether what kind of a penalty the league will give him, or even if they'll give him one at all. So it's very difficult to predict how this is going to play out as far as the league is concerned. I think that it'll get resolved one way or the other before the season begins. Whatever happens is going to happen. They're going to decide on it before the first game of the 2024 regular season. So it's not like this could be hanging over Rice in 2025. I think they'll figure it out before then. Just the question is, will it amount to a suspension? And if so, for how long? It's hard to imagine that something like this, where no one was apparently seriously injured, could extend to six games, but who knows? There's just no way to tell.
I bring it up because we have to, but there's really not a lot we can know right now.
Yeah.
I think it is something that we'll have to, you know, have updates on. We'll see how the legal situation plays out. It seems like that has been Kansas City's MO. I had seen this in a comment. Not that I love every Arrowhead Pride comment that we get, John, but one thing that we have learned over the years is if Andy Reid calls you should probably tell him exactly what happened.
Yes.
and just kind of take it. You know, we learned that in the Kareem Hunt situation. And so, you know, so long as Rasheed got the right advice, you know, in terms of that. You know, I've said this before in the podcast. The one thing that I know that Andy Reid says in the team meeting ahead of every season at training camp is the fastest way out of here is to lie to me. And so these players get the message on day one. And so we will see. Very disappointing, just because I think, you know, when, especially from the football side of it, way less serious than the real life side, but from the football side of it, you got Hollywood Brown in the building, you got a draft coming up, suddenly you're feeling good about the wide receivers and all the pass catching and what this offense can be. And this is something that weighs down the Chiefs, and unfortunate to say here too, John, and I know every NFL team deals with it from time to time, but I feel like we cannot shake off the field stories like this here in Kansas City. I mean, I haven't sat down and went to every team site and looked at how many legal situations there are. I know throughout the league, you know, you have them, but it feels like every year thing for us where I'm looking up police blotters in some capacity. I don't know if that's luck or not luck or whatever, but just the reality of,
I think it happens at other teams too. Maybe not as often as it has in Kansas City in recent years, but I think we're just looking at an outlier situation here. It's just coincidence that it's played out this way, and we might end up going 10 years before we have another situation quite like this. I mean, certainly you can say a lot of this stuff has happened with the Raiders, for example.
Yeah, of course.
So I don't know that it's necessarily something that's focused on Kansas City. I don't know that I would go there.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that I know there's a lot of people that are, think that this may affect what the team does in the draft. And I'm not so sure that's true. Mm-hmm. When the folks who believe this use the Tyreek Hill situation as the template for this belief. But I think this situation is much different than the Tyreek Hill situation. I think what Tyreek Hill had been accused of was much more serious.
Yeah,
it was on the domestic violence spectrum, which the NFL feels a lot differently about than they do about, you know, say a traffic accident, mm-hmm. even a serious one. And I think there was a serious question in the Chiefs' minds about whether Hill would still be on the team, much less suspended at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Trying to remember back with that situation and talking to people at that time, especially at the beginning and when there was just so much uncertainty, there was real concern that he would never play again. I know he ended up getting nothing. He got no game, you know, no punishment as far as the law goes. And then no games because of that, you know, with the NFL investigation. And so, I think at the time the Chiefs were preparing for the worst. And so they made a quick decision.
And that happened like just as the draft was set to begin, you know, and there's a whole nother month now that the Chiefs will have to find out information and make a decision about, you know, what the possibilities are, et cetera. I think they're going to say, well, we may lose him for a few games, just as if he got hurt at training camp. That doesn't mean we have to change the player we draft.
Before the Rice situation came about, I was thinking the Chiefs would take a receiver or two in the NFL draft, and it didn't necessarily have to be in the first round. And I still feel the exact same way. Yeah, I don't think it changes the Chiefs' strategy, you know, in the upcoming draft at all. Again, we'll see how the draft goes. You know, if you're going based upon team need, right? Like, again, I'm not the draft analyst. We leave that to Ron Kopp and the boys. I mean, offensive tackle is the most important at this stage. All right, let's move on from that story. Finally, Darius Sneed and the trade became official over the weekend. He goes to the Tennessee Titans. They swapped the 7th round picks, John. As you have noted, the Chiefs now pick first in the 7th round. And the Chiefs also get the Titans' 3rd round pick next year. And so that trade's now official. Adarius Sneed goes to Tennessee. Congratulations to him. Got the deal he deserved. Kansas City wasn't willing, quite honestly, to go there. It's always a cash trap in Kansas City because they have to figure out how to get all these guys under the cap. But I did reveal some stuff that I had found out about this trade as it went on. And I think the big misconception, and this often happens with trades like this, because you see the player in Kansas City and you love him and you see how damn good he is, you know, you got to get a 1 or 2 for L'Jarius Sneed. This is the best cornerback in the NFL. And poking around, I found out there was some thoughts, some interest from the Titans, quite obviously, the Minnesota Vikings, Indianapolis Colts, New England Patriots, but there was never an official offer from the Colts or the Patriots. The only other one that considered it was the Minnesota Vikings, who were considering a 4th rounder this year and a 3rd rounder next year. When they explored some of the medical history of L'Jarius Sneed, they withdrew. And that was stuff that we talked about on the podcast last week. This was a deal that was in the initial talks, but again, once they saw the medical, they were no longer interested. The Tennessee Titans looked at it, and I think they probably had the training staffs talk to one another, and I think they got to a place where they felt comfortable and felt like they could manage his knee. That really, really hurt his interest and really, really hurt the compensation. And I think based upon, you know, you take everything all in account, I think the Chiefs did pretty good with this trade. If you wanted to free up that cap, it was going to be $19.8 million. I know that some people said that it'd be good to have him around just for the one more year. You know, I appreciate that take, but I think Kansas City has been very, very good at identifying young cornerbacks. It's much like receiver. I tend to think they take 2 stabs at this in the NFL draft. And you still have a Trent McDuffie, a Jalen Watson, a Nazee Johnson in the building. And now you provide the flexibility for yourself that maybe you haven't had in other seasons.
Yeah, the thing that kept coming back to me is that they were trading a player away from the position where they are easily the deepest. Right. The Chiefs have plenty. They're strong linebacker. They're strong at quarterback. No matter who is backing up Patrick Mahomes. But if you're just looking at the number of players who can put in a quality game, there's really no position that is stronger than defensive back, particularly cornerback. So I just never have bought into the idea that the Chiefs needed to spend, $19.8 million against the cap this year in order to keep Snead on the team. I always thought it was a no-brainer to find somebody who could to whom they could trade him. And the way to do that was to put the tag on him. And of course, when you put the tag on a player, you have to be prepared to pay him that money. And the Chiefs would have done that. They'd have been happy to do it, but I think they would have been overpaying what they got back from having him on the team this year, just because they have such a deep a group of players at that position. So I think this played out the way the Chiefs wanted. I think people just thought that they'd get more for them, and they were disappointed in the return in the deal. But I'm not sure that they could have gotten much more without a team making a deal that they would later regret.
Yeah, the Chiefs at the time ended up with $25.7 million to work with the cap. I know that's probably a little different now, John. We'll see in the coming days what Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Carson Wentz end up getting. We'll talk about them in a second here. Ron Kopp, he likes receivers Tyler Boyd and Odell Beckham Jr. who remain out there. I have been told that there is interest in bringing Mike Dana back with some of that money. I thought it would happen pretty quickly. As of this recording, it is Wednesday at 11:13 a.m. So, maybe by the time you listen to this podcast at 5 p.m., Mike Dana is on the team.
It won't happen until 10 o'clock tonight when we're that's away from our desks.
That's the theme that it's been. But it makes plenty of sense, even if it's for another contract year, like 1 year deal, you give him some incentives, the Brett Veach special in a way, the new Brett Veach special. And you bring back the 26-year-old who's been just quietly good for Kansas City. And so much more room to work with now. And so I'm intrigued to see what happens. One of the things they did with the money, John, is bring in Carson Wentz, which surprised me. I know they were interested last year, and so I always thought that there was a possibility, but they go and bring in Wentz, and here is the buzzword that everybody is talking about with Wentz being now the Chiefs backup is sneak, as in the quarterback sneak. We know that Andy Reid has refused to give Patrick Mahomes the okay to pull the quarterback sneak. Not really afraid of Mahomes running, as we saw late in the Super Bowl, but more so just not going to do the same play that cost him two games in 2019 with the dislocated knee. And as it turns out, there's this belief out there that is gaining steam that Carson Wentz could, it's a different type of sneak, but it could be the equivalent of the Jalen Hurts success rate. He has a career success rate of 88.7% when running the quarterback sneak. So there is some thought here that Creed, Humphrey, and Carson Wentz could team up on, let's say, a third or fourth and one and be put out there in this type of situation where the other team knows exactly what's coming and wouldn't be able to necessarily stop it. I think that's going a little bit far. I think that Carson Wentz, although when you like initially hear it, you're like, why did my Chiefs do this? I can't handle Carson Wentz in the Chiefs. He's probably the best backup Mahomes has had. Really, yeah. when it comes to win rate in the NFL, I know a lot of people feel strongly about quarterback wins not becoming a stat, but he's above 500 in the NFL as a starter. And so you like to see him come in. He shares that connection with Nick Foles. Nick Foles filled in as the backup for him in Philly all those years ago, and he ended up winning a Super Bowl. The way that story began is Andy Reid brought Nick Foles back in the fold behind Alex Smith. And Foles was about to retire, and then he I think had a start or two when Alex was dealing with some neck issues and ends up going and getting the backup job in Philadelphia, and the rest is history. I believe he got paid big by the Jacksonville Jaguars. So who knows? Maybe history will repeat itself in a very, very, very weird way anyway, here in Kansas City. John, I'll throw it to you. What did you think of the Wentz contract?
Well, I'm a little intrigued now by the quarterback sneak thing, and I wasn't until I took a closer look at Wentz. I mean, I haven't, you know, I don't pay a lot of attention to players in the details of players who don't play in Kansas City. That's just who I am, the way I've been for, you know, 30 years of doing this kind of work. And I wasn't aware that he was 6'4 and 237 pounds. He's built like a damn fullback.
Right.
So maybe there's something to this idea that they could bring him in short yardage situations. I mean, what if the Chiefs decided to put Carson Wentz every time it's put him in there every time it's say third and two or shorter? And, you know, he'd still be able to throw the ball. He's got an arm on him, you know, but he'd also be able to bring in the possibility of going for a sneak, which is something that other teams know the Chiefs won't do. And if and it would certainly be a better option than putting a tight end under center to do a tight end sneak, if you know, which is what the Chiefs have done the last couple of years.
I won't even say that's blasphemy. That's not blasphemy. That's blasphemy. Come on. He's good at that. Noah Gray also did a little bit of that. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean,
it's a step forward any way you look at it, really.
I think what the Eagles have proved is like there are unbeatable plays that you could run in the NFL. Not to say that it's going to necessarily be the same exact tush-push.
Right. I think
the only time the Chiefs tried the tush-push was with the special teams unit, which drives me a little crazy, but... I don't hate it. I mean, it's not something like I'm like, oh, I'm in love that Carson Wentz is in Kansas City. I do like that he has brown hair and a red beard like myself.
We can meet on that
plane. All right, let's get into the next edition. Running back carousel in Kansas City. It was a weird Tuesday. J.K. Dobbins was apparently visiting with the Chiefs. Seemed like a really good option, a guy with high upside. A similar story, I think, in a sense. Jared Sapp pointed us out to Jerick McKinnon, where he's just been having a ton of injuries and, you know, all the talent there, but, you know, can't find a way to stay on the field. And so people were excited. He ended up tearing his Achilles last year, week one, third significant injury in the NFL. And so, you do raise eyebrows at that. But again, like I wrote, when he is healthy, he looks to be one of the better running backs in the NFL. Didn't end up with the Chiefs, even though his agent told Adam Schefter that he would have a home very, very soon, still without a home a day later. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, though, is back in the fold. And I think it makes plenty of sense. I put out a clip yesterday via the franchise that the Chiefs put out. Great job by them. But just how much Isaiah Pacheco and Clyde are close, very clearly have this working relationship, both in the locker room, on the field, off the field. They seem to really like each other. I think much similar to like the McColl coming back standpoint. I know that Clyde never left, but I think he comes back on this 1 year deal. He's probably looked at a little bit differently, both, you know, in his own right, probably the way he looks at his own role. And I think the way the fans look at his role had those starts at the end of the year when Pacheco was a little banged up. I thought did a pretty good job, looked pretty good down the stretch. Doesn't need to learn the playbook. I know that Patrick Mahomes likes him. Patrick Mahomes signs off on all these types of contracts. And so, I think it's a good move for KC, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't add a running back in the NFL draft. Right. And there's been reports that maybe they can connect with J.K. Dobbins later in the offseason. You know, this running back class, from what we can tell, is not so great. So I don't even know if there'll be a diamond in the rough, like in week in round six or round seven, that type of thing. And so I like it. I know maybe that's controversial. I think less controversial given the end of his season and how solid he was toward the end there than maybe it would have been early last year. John, do you like the Clyde signing here?
It's pretty much exactly what I expected. I thought the Chiefs would sign him to something close to a vet minimum deal. We don't know exactly how much they signed him for, but honestly, I'm expecting a veteran salary benefit contract where they gave him a $167,000 signing bonus as a thank you for being what they needed for 4 years, and otherwise pay him the vet minimum. You know, running backs were making a lot of money in free agency. That was the big story of the first couple of weeks of free agency, is that there were some big contracts going out to running backs again.
Yeah.
And apparently nobody was interested in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And that meant that the Chiefs we're in a strong position to bring him back at a very inexpensive contract. And I think it's going to be right there at the bottom on that VSB deal, but they'll still be able to give him a bonus that he can, you know, make his house payments for the year or whatever, pay his tuition in medical school or whatever it is he's got going on.
Yeah.
I think, I think it's going to be a cheap deal for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And like I said, I think he got a little bit, of credit back toward the end of last year when he really did, I think, take on his spell role and was good at it and the spot starts and things like that.
Yeah.
Chiefs have been loading up their running back room in a sense with this flyer that they took on the International Player Pathway Program. We nailed it last week. Let's give credit where credit's due. We said there's a good chance that he would join the Chiefs, and then hours later, he was a member of the Chiefs. But Lewis Riz-Zamet joins Kansas City. From what we can tell, John, right? This does not count against the 90 man. That is that right?
My understanding is that every team this year will have the opportunity to put one of these international pathway players on its practice squad without using a practice squad spot. That is, if you have an IPP player, you can have 17 players on your practice squad. I'm not sure that extends to the regular season roster, however, or the offseason 90-man roster. I'd have to research that to be certain. I know that I've got the practice squad part of it right during the regular season, however. That much I know for sure. In any case, you know, it's not a big investment to have a guy on the 90-man roster in the offseason. Where it becomes an issue is once the regular season begins. Is he taking up a roster spot on either the active roster or the practice squad? And he doesn't have to clear a very high bar to remain in the Chiefs' employ for the regular season, whether it's on the practice squad or the 53, more likely the practice squad, I think, just because he has so little experience playing NFL football. But I love the kind of potential that you see with this guy when you see the video of what he's done as a rugby player. He just looks like he's exciting and fun and amazing. So
the new kickoff, it's truly game changing. I mean, it does look like a rugby play. And I think that's where I think, you know, Lewis Riz-Zamet to me is a long shot. I think the Chiefs feel that way, but he's got the size and skill. So, you know, bring him in. Why not? And let's kind of see, you know, what we have here. You know, John, I've called you this last podcast, and from here on out, I'm calling you it. You're a Tobe head. And I think, you know, something that I know annoys you is the disrespect sometimes Uncle Dave gets and how good he is at his job. This new kickoff, enforcing people to return again, is going to be even bigger for the third phase. And so, you know, I'm talking to some people with the Chiefs, you know, they're looking at, you know, those backup tight end and running back and linebacker positions, and you're going to have to play your ass off in special teams. Like, how often do we talk about how, you know, imagine if Patrick Mahomes was starting at the 20 every drive. I mean, would the Chiefs never stop scoring? Now, especially that, you know, we'll see what happens with Rice, but you have Hollywood Brown in the building. They're going to add in the draft. You still have Travis Kelce, you know, and, you know, I think Noah Gray and, of course, Isaiah Pacheco and all these weapons here. You know, I think kickoffs this year are going to be huge. I think the Chiefs are looking at it that way, and we'll see if I want to make sure I get it right. Riz-Zamet finds a way onto the roster, but it does make the preseason more interesting, John.
In my opinion. And we'll have fun watching him in training camp. There's no question about that. He's going to be a feature of your daily reports in training camp, I feel certain, Pete. So you just better be ready for that right now.
We'll see. Yeah, I can. If I can get one pick at training camp of Justin Ross and Riz-Zamet together in the same photograph, that's it. I'll finally get to 100,000 followers just from that one post. Charles O'Manahue went on with Kay Adams. It looks like he is 6 weeks out from actually being able to have regular workouts. He's walking again. He was excited about that. Would not put a timetable on it, but he went a little crazy and saying he's ready for his revenge tour this year. This is one player who is hoping that the San Francisco 49ers and Houston Texan games are at the latter end of the season, because I don't think he's going to be ready. I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, because he hates when people put a timetable on him, but I don't think he's going to be ready for week one. I think that'd be unrealistic. But he is looking forward to playing the Texans and the Niners, who were both on the Chiefs schedule. Remember, he didn't get to play in the Super Bowl, was not signed by the Niners. That opened up the Chiefs to go and get him. Really good season after the 6-game suspension. Was looking like one of the baddest, in a good way, one of the baddest defensive linemen in the league when he went out in the AFC title. And so we will see where he lands, what week he's back. I got to imagine this is going to be like a week 8, week 9, and beyond thing. It would be for me. And the Chiefs are cautious to begin with, right? Like, they're not just going to put a player back on the field. So, but exciting, right? That he's on the mend and doing well to this point.
I know that there, when there was a question about whether or not the Chiefs would have any cap space to work with in the offseason and the regular season, there was a lot of discussion about restructuring his contract or cutting him, because he would, you know, he does have a camp impact for this season, and he's going to miss most of it. It looks like at least half of it, it would appear to us at this point. But I think that talk has died down now that the Chiefs have some cap space to work with. And I think he'll be coming back at exactly the right time down the home stretch and in the postseason where they will need him the most.
A couple other stories here as we wrap up. Trey Smith, John, you wrote this up for us. He was among the league leaders in performance-based pay in 2023. My man made $865,000 and $484. $865,484
approximately.
Just from his performance. That was seventh in the NFL.
Yeah. This is something that happens every year. We don't always get all the information about it we would like. I, for example, would like to know how much all of the Chiefs made in performance-based pay.
Does it affects next year's cap?
No, it has no effect on the salary cap, because when the salary cap was announced at $255.4 million, the league also announced that each team would have, I believe it was $74 million in player benefits that they would be given to them to be paid out in player benefits. And that's where this performance-based pay comes from, is from that $74 million. It was a total of 300 and, I want to say, I've forgotten, it's over $350 million, I think. So it's about $10 million and change per team, $11 million per team. Mm-hmm. And if we did the math, we could estimate, you know, how much the guys at the bottom end of the scale make, but I'd like to find the list. I'm still looking to find the list someplace so I could find out, because apparently Aaron Rodgers made the least in the whole league. And it was like,
well, he made a couple, like a couple plays,
$42 or something, some ridiculous amount of money. So to see how it all plays out.
He gave us a moment when he announced his, when he carried the American flag out for the opening game. So the Chiefs announced their offseason workout dates. These are just dates upon your calendar. First day is April 15th. John, I believe that's when we'll get Mahomes and Reed via Zoom.
Yeah.
Mahomes will be down in Texas getting ready for Camp Pat. And Andy Reed will discuss, you know, what they have planned for those defensive players in Kansas City. And I would imagine, reiterate that he trusts Mahomes and is going to be directing them via video. Crazy what like COVID did in that regard for just different ways for teams to go about it. And I find it interesting. You know, we're not trying to get into politics here, so no big COVID talk, but I find it interesting what has lasted through the COVID period, even past it now that teams, and this is one of those where, you know, they can do coaching via Zoom while these guys are all in Texas. All right, John, I know you were very, very excited about this, but Kelce Jam is back for May 18th. And I got to ask you, are you most excited for Lil Wayne, Diplo, or 2 Chainz?
I wouldn't know how to answer that. That's way beyond what I'm familiar with.
Well, the correct answer to me is Mr. Make It Rain on them hoes, Lil Wayne. I didn't really consider going to the last one. I believe last year was Machine Gun Kelly. This year, you can tell that Travis Kelce has gained some celebrity steam, because this is a better lineup than it was last year. No offense to our guy Tech Nine in Kansas City, but I think he was in the lineup last year. This is a bigger lineup, and I imagine Kelce Jam 2 will carry over into Kelce Jam 3. And I wonder, as the celebrity grows, if this ends up being one of the bigger concerts that people go to. It was kind of, I'll be honest, it was kind of one of these like funny things he was doing last year, when now it seems to be, you know, a true musical event that people are going to be interested in, John.
Well, and part of the reason why is that there will be an expectation that Taylor Swift will be on the premises.
Yeah, that helps.
Performing, right. Helps, now, yeah. I'd be surprised if she performs. I know that there's jokes being made about, well, he's not much of a promoter if he can't get Taylor Swift to play his concert. Well, no, it doesn't really work that way. If you're an artist of Taylor Swift's stature, you just don't do that kind of thing. And you shouldn't do that kind of thing, because, you know, then you can't command the money that you get to do these concerts in these enormous stadiums and make the kind of money that she makes. So, but, you know, if he's there and she's not touring someplace, there's a good chance she will also be there.
Yeah. The easy counterpoint is like, hey, look, there's a honeydew list, even for millionaires, billionaires. If you look, you may not want to play Kelce Jam, but if it's on the honeydew list, you may be playing Kelce Jam. Lastly, we joked about it at the beginning. Stefon Diggs is traded to the Houston Texans. Identifying this from a Kansas City angle, to me, I just think like this is clearly the Bills waving their white flag on the opening iteration of what they were in the initial year of Josh Allen, in the initial years of Josh Allen. This is a rebuild. I mean, you look at the starting receivers as of this podcast, it's going to be Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir. So we're about to find out how good Josh Allen really is. These were the years of Josh Allen in that initial wave of the Bills, their initial try to win the Super Bowl. No playoffs in 18, wild card loss in 19, AFC title loss in 20, and then three straight divisional round losses. John, three of those last four, the Chiefs dealt them the death blow. 20 in the AFC title game. You had the 13 seconds in 21, and then wide right part two in 23. So disappointing for Buffalo. You feel bad. You actually feel bad in a way. Maybe not at the time, but you just, when you look at it, that all in a block, that is a tough, you know, a tough series of results when you really feel like you have one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, it is. But I don't think you need the disclaimer there, Pete. I don't think you need to say they're waving the white flag on what the team was when Josh Allen arrived. I think you just say they're waving the damn white flag. I'm just saying.
You're saying they're never going to get past the Chiefs.
Yeah.
One of these years, you got to think like I know that Burrow was able to do it, but this is Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning will have his years. And, you know, that's a hard thing to say, but it'll happen at some point. All right. That's it for the podcast today. Covered a lot of different varied topics.
We did, yeah.
My brain is about to explode. So we're going to shut things down. Thank you to Steve for joining us for that opening roundtable. Keep it locked in on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. Steve and the team getting you ready for the NFL draft. They're going through different prospects. I know you guys love that stuff, so we appreciate that. Rocky, Ron, the crew, appreciate what they're doing for the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. If you like our network, leave us a rating and a review. We're still going for that 4.8. Remember, you know, one more message here. Even if you don't want to leave us a review for us to read, just leave us the 5 stars. Slowly but surely, we will get to that 4.8 number we're looking for. And you know what? I'm greedy, right? I'm like these billionaire owners. I'm going to want 4.9. So let's just get started, you know, as we go.
Pretty soon we'll be charging a 3/8 of a cent tax to listen to the podcast, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, that's it. Again, thank you to Steve. Thank you to John. My name's Pete. This has been another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.